You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information. The views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the network, its advertisers, owners, or sponsors.
Hello, my name is Sean Cleland. I'm a collaboratively trained attorney and a mediator. I founded Cleland Collaborative Solutions with the goal of helping people to improve how people in our community think about and approach divorce. For those who have experienced divorce as I have, you know that divorce is much more than a legal problem involving rights. Divorce can have a profound negative effect on our health and finances. It can have a devastating effect on our children. My podcast will provide you with the perspective and information needed to achieve a healthier divorce and a better post-divorce life. And we're joined today with another podcast with Emily Alber. Hi, Emily.
Hi.
Emily's joining me by phone today. She's out of town, so it might sound a little different out there, but thanks for joining us today, Emily.
It's my pleasure. So, fun to do this from a different location.
Yeah, by phone. I can't see your smiling face, but that's okay. Today we're going to talk about gray divorce, and it's a different topic than we've talked about here before. We thought it'd be an interesting one for people. And gray divorce is a term that people listening out there might not know what I mean by that. And commonly what gray divorce is known as is people getting divorced when they're over the age of 50, usually between the ages of 50 and say 65. And there is some unique challenges for people who are facing that, unique issues. That's what we're going to talk about today, right?
Yeah, and then your tips and weighing in on how to lessen the harmful impact of gray divorce.
Oh, of course.
Which we've separately discussed all of these unique scenarios, and it's been interesting.
Right.
Yeah, so we could start out with, there's myths, I'm assuming, about just divorce across the board. What are some of those that you come across with a gray divorce in particular?
I'll give you some of the stats that usually leave people staggered with, like, wow. And one of them is to know that this demographic, people over the age of 50 getting divorced, this gray divorce demographic, is basically the largest growing demographic of divorce in the country. Used to be people thought that, you are most vulnerable to get divorced in the first 10 years of marriage. And it looks like the stats don't support that theory, that actually 1 in 4 divorces in 2010 were between adults who were 50 years of age or older. That's a significant mm-hmm. amount of people. And so that's something that really makes people think about, why is that? What is going on? Why is that the growing proportion of divorces? And there's a lot of reasons for that. One of which is that a lot of people who are getting divorced over the age of 50 are people who are going through not their first divorce, but maybe their second divorce after their second marriage. And the stats will tell you that second marriages are the type that are going to fail on a percentage basis at a much higher rate than first marriages.
That's really shocking, actually, for me, at least when I was reading through all of the information that we were going to discuss today. I think a lot of this stuff is taking me totally by surprise. When you were talking about gray divorce, what would immediately pop into my head were people who were, married forever and then decided, in the golden years to part ways.
Right.
I didn't think about all of the different marriage scenarios that could possibly play into that.
And I think it's important to keep that thought in mind, Emily, because, people are surprised when they hear about gray divorce when they say, boy, why would you, people have, they've raised children, they've been married for 30 years, and then they turn around and get divorced. It's kind of like getting through a really long novel and just before you get to the end, kind of throwing the book out. Mm-hmm. And that's, there's a legacy loss in that, and people don't necessarily understand why that might happen. And I think that it's important that, for people who have been in those long-term marriages, haven't been married before, and are getting divorced after, you know, 30, 25, 20 years of marriage. They're in a different category than those folks I mentioned earlier who might be in their second or third marriage and are getting divorced in this category. Far different situation, much different types of issues to deal with. And so a lot of what I'm going to talk about today are those folks who are, you know, getting a divorce in this age group, but after a long-term marriage, after having, you know, raised a family, and what issues they might be facing and what might be important to them.
So what do you, for based on research or any experience you have, who typically initiates these divorces? Like, that's got to be an interesting situation, not maybe fully a joint.
Yeah, it's interesting. This is something I think I've heard from people, and maybe it's just folklore, perhaps, about divorce. But, you know, the mindset had been for years that, you know, people getting divorced when they're in, you know, in their 50s are often initiated by, say, a guy who is then going to try and is starting to date a younger woman and is going to get remarried, right? You know, we've heard the derogatory and negative way people phrase that by saying trophy wife. The fact of the matter is that actually that is not true. In fact, 2/3 of people in this category of gray divorce who initiate the divorce are women. And that really, I think for a lot of people, again, it kind of makes them think, boy, I had a misconception about why people are getting divorced. And so that's another way for people to kind of reset their thinking about people getting divorced in this demographic.
That actually doesn't surprise me.
Right.
I feel like women are really good at, are better communicators. You might disagree with that, but maybe ages.
They are, but it's not just
that to be a struggle.
Yeah, it's not just that, though. I think that a lot of it has to do with what we're seeing is that, you know, increasingly, and not fast enough, but increasingly, women are starting to experience more parity economically in the workplace. They're out there in the world. And there's a lot less mutual dependence in 2018 economically for a couple in this age category than maybe when they started off as a married couple. So the way things were.
Well, there's a lot of women's issues coming up too now.
Right. Well, 1985.
So I feel like that might.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. 1985, relationships were different because the world was different. And so women don't have to feel like they're stuck in a relationship because that isn't healthy or has lots of high conflict or what have you, because they a lot of them are experiencing much more freedom. And so there's, you know, women are in a better spot. And I think that that's reflected in these numbers.
Yeah, I guess it just triggered me to think, I wonder how many gray divorces were sparked by the whole Harvey Weinstein thing. People could have maybe been like, oh, I'm not alone and, you know, I'm done with this. Not saying that, you know, in every marriage that people have that dynamic, but women's issues are definitely more at the forefront these days. And with social media and all of these, people are just communicating more fluidly.
There's no doubt about that.
I'm sure that may have something to do with that.
And a lot of the stats we look at for gray divorce are from studies that were done in the 2010 timeframe. So it'll be really interesting to re-examine these statistics when more numbers come in to see how things have changed. But, you know, I'll have to leave that for the sociologists, and we'll just deal with the facts as we know them now.
Or if we're still working together in a decade, we can come back in.
Well, you know,
revisit that.
This is a subject that those sociologists have really talked a lot about. Like, why is it that this generation of people, like people who are above 50, into their 60s, are getting divorced at such a high rate? And you know, they've offered some theories which really do get to issues of sociology. For example, baby boomer issues. You know, baby boomers were known kind of as the generation of self-fulfillment, the first one. That changed the way people looked at marriage. So that generation had a much higher rate of divorce in, you know, the 80s and into the 90s. So there's something to do with that. There are other reasons too, which have nothing to do with baby boomers just being people of, you know, self-fulfillment. I mean, people are living longer. They expect to live mm-hmm. until 90. And so if you're 60 and you really are unhappy with your life, you have 30 more years to go. That might influence your decision to get a divorce at a later age. That wouldn't have been maybe as sensible back in the 60s or the 70s.
When we were talking earlier too, beforehand, just a little bit to get things going, what I had shared was, you know, my experiences with divorce is either, you know, my parents got divorced when I was very young, so I don't know them as being a couple. I mean, I was seven, so I remember some things, but that's not how I identify my parents. And then there's also what I experienced then later on was hearing a lot about, oh my gosh, my parents are getting a divorce. Like, what is going on? And it was conveniently when the kids were out of high school or when they were done with college. And so I think that was, you know, kind of a standout was gray divorce impacting the kids versus we all know how it impacts kids now at this point when it happens early on. But with the baby boomer stuff and all of this self-fulfillment, I think what's running alongside that too is trying to keep things in mind with, you know, let's get through this for the kids and then bam.
Right. I mean, people look at, there's been tons of studies since the 80s about the impact that divorce has on young children. Those studies are very point in one direction, that it's very harmful for children. And mm-hmm. that harm is mental, that harm is physical. And, you know, we've talked on other podcasts about, and in my blog, about ways you can minimize that effect. But what hasn't been studied is what effect does gray divorce have on adult children? Say you've been married for 30 years, your kids are growing up, maybe one's in college, maybe you have two out of college. People tend to think that the lack of information, the lack of chatter about that age group means that maybe there are no problems for the children. But in fact, what studies have been done, what has been researched shows that there is a profound impact on children. And it's one that I think people who might be contemplating a gray divorce have to take into consideration, have to plan for before they get divorced. Because, you know, look, if you spent 30, even if it's going to end in a divorce, you've spent a long period of time making a story about your family. And so you might want to consider ways of making sure that that story continues, even though a divorce is going to take place. So understanding how it's going to affect your children, trying to avoid some pitfalls, will smooth over some of those speed bumps you're going to run into down the road.
Well, you have, you know, the whole, was everything a lie? I know being 35 years old and not married, I've modeled a lot of my relationships off of what I noticed. And, you know, I have siblings who are in extremely healthy marriages and they were in long-term relationships and really took their time before they made those commitments because it's important for them not to go through the same thing that my parents did. And I'm kind of on the other end where, you know, I'm doing that, but I'm about the self-fulfillment and I'm also just making sure that I get myself into the right situation. I can't imagine that if I'm modeling off of what I'm seeing, that if I were to be in a relationship or married at this point in my life and my parents were to announce some divorce when I'm 35, that that wouldn't shake reality for me and have me question my own values and my own decision-making to the core.
No, absolutely. I mean, this is really gets to the heart of what happens to the children, adult children. They have... In some instances, the children know that the marriage hasn't been perfect, okay? In other instances, right, the children don't know anything was ever wrong. But no matter which one of those two scenarios plays out, that family was kind of the reality. It was home base of planet reality for them. Everything in their lives kind of spans out from that home, from that relationship. And for better or worse, the children see themselves kind of as the combination of these two people. So when the divorce occurs, they begin to question reality. I took for granted that my parents would always be together. How can they do this? That you've literally split my view of what it is to live a normal and a not normal life. And so this is an emotion that many children experience, and it's important for parents to recognize that even though their kids might be 30, they might be 32, 28, whatever, they're going to experience that emotion. That, you know, letting your children know somehow, if you can, as parents, that the legacy in your family isn't over, even though you're not going to live together, can go a long way towards smoothing that over for them.
Yeah. So continuing the narrative, you know, with the family, I guess that's also, you know, making that commitment to have a family with someone. When there's children involved, you don't just get to go back to your self-fulfillment period and reclaim your life. You still have responsibilities and still need to move forward in a healthy way and respect and honor, regardless what has happened, that you've had children with someone else, and that needs to be, you know, a part of what happens until the end of time when it comes to your family.
Right. I think a lot of children, adult children, that when they're interviewed and they talk about the effect that their parents' divorce had when they were adults, they talk a lot about that, you know, it makes them hesitant. Maybe how can I trust that I can keep a marriage together? Maybe marriage isn't what I should be doing myself. It makes them question their ability to make good judgments about other people, because they had a judgment about the way that their parents were, and perhaps now they just don't feel confident that they fully understand things. And this even happens with an individual parent, right? There can be, and this happens quite a bit, when parents, adult parents, split and the children are adults, the adult children notice that the parents change a bit. Dad just bought a pink Corvette. Dad is wearing gold chains now. All sorts of just absolute crazy things that happen to their personalities. They've been married. They fit a certain mold that no longer does a parent want to even acknowledge anymore. No, and is not acting like that anymore. And that's a huge change. So they have to adjust to the loss of this image they had of what reality was, what a good relationship looked like, maybe. What a home was, and now they got to have the individual parents change as well. And not only that, but...
Well, you have that component of deception. Like, you feel, was this really the person that was hiding, you know, underneath the marriage all along, and I never really knew who they were
as
a person?
And parents, whether they know it or not, there's a role that they are perceived to play with their children. I always have this... odd analogy I give to people when I get asked about this type of situation. Like, I had to get new glasses recently, and I had an idea of what kind of glasses I wanted to get. You know, no more of this certain look. I wanted to look something different, you know. And I made the mistake of taking my kids to the glasses store with me, and they insisted that I get a pair of glasses that looked exactly like the ones I'd had. And the reason was that that's Dad, and they didn't want Dad to change.
Yeah.
And so that's what adult children continue to feel about their parents down the road. So again, this is important to recognize before you get divorced, that there's going to be a change in the relationship between the parent and the child. And it's important to deal with that upfront, know how to deal with it. One other problem that comes up quite a bit is that the parents aren't talking with one another again, they're not talking with one another, they don't have a support system of maybe each other. Maybe their friends now are maybe keeping distance. And so the parents themselves get isolated. They start to talk to the children, their own children, about how upset they mm-hmm. were, how depressed they feel, how angry they are. Did you hear what your father did? Putting them in the middle. And this is a boundary issue. The children start to get and this is adult children we're talking about, they get very stressed out, they get worried about their parents, and the roles flip. The child then becomes the parent, and the parent then kind of takes a role on as a child. And so this changes the dynamic. And again, if we're talking about a long-term marriage where you've invested, you know, many years in creating this kind of family story, this changes that story dramatically. So there are steps that these parents can take. It's important to read about it, about making sure that you maintain proper boundaries and give your kids a chance to grieve themselves.
I like also your approach with in discussion about community impact. I've even seen couples that were very close with my family get a divorce, and that was even earth-shattering. And it really kind of reinforced that perception as reality. And for a deep thinker like myself, that's catastrophic. But, you know, right. I keep moving it when I come to back to evaluating relationships of my own. It is the ripple effect. It comes from everywhere. And I like how you often talk about how, you know, not even keeping your children in mind, but the community.
Right. The longer you've been married, the more the world kind of grows up around you, right? Mm-hmm. you're part of the community, so everything kind of takes you into account. And when your family changes, the community is going to react. And often this takes the form of how your divorce is going to affect friends and acquaintances, you know. Understanding the reaction that your friends are going to have to your divorce is an important thing. You know, your friends are going to feel like, oh, someone's going to make me choose sides, so maybe they stay away from you.
Yeah.
And if the friends are kind of staying back, then it's really going to increase the sense of abandonment that the divorcing parent feels. They're going to feel isolated. They don't have their friends anymore. The way that they would engage in the community isn't there for them any longer. And so that growing isolation is a real terrible element, and it can cause a lot of depression for people.
Yeah, when I was seeing in your presentation, there was a couple of slides from the PowerPoint you used in a past presentation that were kind of connected to me when I was reading through the stressors that are unique to people in the demographic that we're discussing, you know, being declining health, retirement, empty nest syndrome. What am I supposed to do? And it seems, you know, is that supposed to be reinvigorating your life by getting a divorce? Is that, you know, and then dad goes into pink Corvette mode. But then also sort of what that conflict must cause for the individual is then having to look at the opposite side, which is financial impact.
That's huge.
Those types of other issues. Yeah.
The financial impact.
So you've got to be faced with that right. conflict between the two. Do I restart my life? And then what do I have to take into consideration if, you know, this isn't such an easy out?
Yeah, this is what really makes gray divorce really unique, in particular for people who are getting divorced after a long marriage. And we just talked a lot about the effect on the children and the need to protect the legacy and the need to protect, you know, even like the relationship with your grandchildren will be affected by this divorce. You know, if your relationship with your own kids is affected negatively, you won't see your grandkids as often. So there's a legacy protection. There's the family, you know, maintaining a family. That's all important. But the other half of the problem with gray divorce and what makes it unique is the financial issues. Now, sure, divorce is a bad financial deal for anyone. Few profit from it. But what was really concerning about people getting divorced at an older age in a long-term marriage is that oftentimes this financial crisis occurs at a time when we really can't afford it. If you're in your mid-50s, and say you haven't been working full time, say that you haven't been working at all, say you haven't achieved the education that you need in today's world to work because you've been able to stay together for a long period of time on maybe one source of income or one and a half sources of income. Now you have to go and find a job. Now your retirement income, which was sufficient for people to live off of as a couple is no longer sufficient. The statistics show that gray married couples, you know, people in that demographic, will have they have in retirement savings a lot more money than people who get divorced in this demographic. In fact, if you get divorced in a gray demographic, you will have 1/5 of the money of a gray married couple. So you are really losing a lot of assets at a time when you don't have a lot of career ahead of you to make up the difference. You know, stats show at what point in time in your life are you best able to make a lot of money? And you might be past that in some of these divorces. So it's a financial crisis at the wrong time in your life. And that creates a lot of stress. Having worked with people in divorce who were in the mid-50s, I remember very vividly a woman who went through this who only had a high school education and had never really worked, had raised children, had done a great job at it. But now she was faced with having to go and get a job and maybe having to go get some education. And this was absolutely terrifying and rightfully so. So add that emotion to the loss of your family and this legacy issue, and you really, you know, it can be traumatic.
Well, in that
for people.
Age.
Right.
That the health issues that come along with stress at that age are also pretty dangerous.
Well, that's true. You know, the connection between stress and health effects is well documented now. And I think outside of a death of a spouse, divorce is maybe the most stressful experience you can go through. So mm-hmm. It's never a good idea. I mean, there are some what I try and tell people who are going through a gray divorce is that, you know, there are some things they can do to diminish the negative impact, the financial crisis that divorce might cause in their life. And so it's important that if you are going to be going through a gray divorce, you contemplate one's coming up, it's great if you have some time up front to really do your research and prepare yourself correctly for what's going to happen to you. Recognizing the issues you'll be facing and then having a plan to deal with it is the best strategy to, you know, controlling the stress and controlling the crisis financially so that you're not going to find yourself in a bad way.
Yeah, I know that you and I particularly can talk about the social issues for hours and hours and hours about all of these potential side effects of all this stuff. But when people do make the decision to go through with a gray divorce, what choices do they have in terms of, like, how do they go about doing so? And that's your method in particular, I'm sure would be helpful on the financial end for people who are, you know, trying to be conservative at that point.
Right. I mean, so we get to the two issues, the financial and the preserving the legacy and the relationship, if you can, are two things. And both of those needs in people in this demographic are best served through having your divorce managed outside of the court setting. If you can do mediation in the way that we do it, collaborative practice is another option. And the reasons are pretty simple. First, from a financial aspect, you know, you're going to want to work with the experts. And when you work with me in a mediation, I make sure that these people are working directly with a certified divorce financial analyst who can help them budget, understand their situation, and at least give them a plan to proceed as best they can into their post-divorce future. But they're also going to spend a lot less money in the process. When I take a couple in for a mediation, for example, they can pick to use an attorney if they want to. Some choose not to. Some choose to use attorneys only for specific purposes. And that is a lot cheaper than hiring attorneys to start your divorce from beginning to end. So you're going to save a lot of money if you mediate your divorce, and that's a good thing because you have less money to burn at that point in time. You need to conserve what you have. But also these methods also provide families an opportunity to, you know, achieve the divorce, get through the divorce in a way that doesn't worsen the conflict, doesn't get people angrier with one another when it's all over with. You have a shorter period of time to get through. You need to preserve relationships with your children. You have a legacy to protect. And these are things that are very much in the forefront of my mind as I work as a mediator with people to help them, you know, to get to that post-divorce life in the least difficult way and in a way that sets them off and, you know, a good way to adjust to a post-divorce life.
So what are the top reasons for people to be choosing mediation and collaborative practice for gray divorce?
I think there are a few that are really compelling. The first one is, like I said, saving money. You get to use attorneys only to the extent that you need them. You're going to save a lot of money there. You're going to just spend a lot less time in a court. So you're going to save a ton of money with mediation or collaborative practice. You're also going to save a lot of time. Divorce court can take a very long time. Divorce through a mediation process or a collaborative practice can take a lot shorter amount of time, and that's less stress on you. The mediation and collaborative practice also can reduce a lot of the stress because we specialize in managing the conflict rather than trying to allow the conflict to get out of hand. And that's where attorneys make their money. They create a lot of conflict amongst people, a lot of competition, and becomes kind of a fight. That's not the approach we take with mediation and collaborative practice. We're going to try and contain that. And really what it comes down to is that no one ever improves their family life after they got done suing one another in court. You know, eventually after the divorce is final, you're going to have to show up at a birthday party for a child or a grandchild again. How are you going to make that transition if you just left a courtroom? That's what we specialize in at Cleland Collaborative Solutions, is making sure that people can make that transition appropriately. The other thing that a lot of people want to know about these two methods of getting divorced is that in court, it's all public. You're arguing. It's a public record. In court, your hearings, everything you do in mediation and collaborative practice is completely confidential. Really, most people can get through a divorce before anyone even knows is going on. The other one is that, and I think this is important, that I don't ever involve, if I have a divorce with young children, they're not coming to the room to mediate a divorce with me. But adult children, I think they have an opportunity in mediation or collaborative practice, if the parents want them involved, to voice their concerns to them and include them somewhat in this process as well. So I think that there's a lot of family help that collaborative practice and mediation offers to people specifically in this gray divorce demographic.
That's great. So if people are interested in pursuing this method, how do they get in touch with you and what can you offer them up front?
Well, the easiest way of getting in touch with me would be to go to my website just to kind of read about what I do. That's clelandsolutions.com. You can also reach me at my office, 586-981-0990. I will tell anybody that if they have questions, if they're just considering that a divorce is possible, they want to do their research, they want to make sure that they set themselves up for the best possible financial outcome, the best possible family outcome in their divorce, and they want to figure out how to get that done, I offer everybody a free one-hour consultation to give them all their options, the pros and cons of each, that way I can help people make a smarter decision and maybe give those families a better post-divorce life.
Great. People can also find you on social media and listen to past podcasts by visiting either podcastdetroit.com or checking out Cleland Collaborative Solutions on Facebook and Twitter.
That's right.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for including me this time, even though I'm out of town.
Hey.
It's always a pleasure to have these productive conversations with you. Stimulating.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining me, Emily.
Not a problem. Talk to you soon.
Bye now. Learn more about the mediation and collaborative practice services that we offer. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and on the web. please visit clelandsolutions.com for more information.